an Ironic Media production. Visit us at ironicmedia.com.
I could see the emotion. She couldn't say it, but I could feel I could see the emotion. I just hugged her and held her tightly. And then we just had tears of joy. So it was such a bonding moment for her to see that, because I've had my own ahas. The resentment was because she wasn't affectionate. I understand why. Mm-hmm. Like, I tell her, and it's a blessing that she gets it and it's connecting it, that you couldn't offer me what you didn't get.
Right.
And it's so beautiful that we're creating that now.
Hello, and welcome to Dementia Discussions, the podcast for and about caregivers. If you'd like to share your caregiving story, I'd love to hear from you. Please call me at 310-362-8232. Today, my guest is Denise. I know Denise from my caregiver support group through Alzheimer's Los Angeles. And Denise is a relatively new member of the group, and so welcome to our group and welcome here today on the podcast. So welcome, Denise. It's great to have you.
Well, it's great to be here. And I think it's such a blessing for you to host Dementia Discussions. I love a place for and about caregivers. Much needed.
Oh, thank you. So you're here to talk about your mom. Tell us a little bit about your mom. Give us some background about who she is.
My mother is quite sweet, altruistic woman. I grew up seeing her being just so generous, gave whatever she could to someone in need, just very resourceful, hardworking, and a woman of faith. And I think that's what's helped her through life's trials and tribulations, having that strong faith. I see it now, like not letting the challenges or deceit or anything bad that has happened taint her spirit. And that's something I've grown to admire even more and more.
Has she had a pretty tough life?
Yes, she has. So it's been tough. So that makes it, that stirs up stuff dealing with such a diagnosis. It's like, why? But we know those questions are not even, it's not the place for that. Yeah.
Right. Dementia has no boundaries. We can all get dementia, sadly. It affects everyone, or could affect everyone, I should say.
Yeah. Yes.
And you have told us in group that you're an only child. Is that right?
Yes, I'm an only child. So it's just growing up. And even now I remind my mother, it's like, we're the big family of two. So yes, naturally I took on full on the caregiving. I didn't even see myself as a caregiver, just being a caring, engaged, loving daughter. But as we know, dealing with a diagnosis like dementia is a life-changing thing. It's not a quick thing. So which leads us to needing spaces like this to talk about how to navigate this transition, this new way of life, honestly, for everybody. Not only the person with the diagnosis, but also those of us that care for them.
Absolutely. How old is your mom?
Oh, my mom is 80. I recently got confirmation of the diagnosis, but I've seen the decline for the last handful of years. I saw it. I saw the behavior changes, more than usual forgetfulness, putting important things in unusual places, losing her cell phone, her wallet, money, not paying bills on time. All that stuff, when she's always been a very responsible woman to pride herself in, I paid my bills, I did this, and now it's not happening. So all of that was red flags for me. And so I asked her doctor to conduct an assessment or do a referral to a specialist. It was ignored for years. I just continued to care for her and notice these things. But then I noticed more pronounced changes. And I could not allow the doctor to ignore. So I just asked for another doctor, asked for a second opinion. And that unfolded the assessment process, get the neuropsych and all that in. Sadly, and in a relief kind of way, to get a confirmation that, oh my mom is not giving me a hard time on purpose. I'm not off to notice these things. It's actually something real. That helped to get the diagnosis. For her, it's dementia, combination vascular, and Alzheimer's. So
I get it. Yeah, it's heavy.
It's heavy, but it gives you perspective once you know what you have on your plate.
So you're right. A relief. But yet very sad. I mean, kind of confirmation of something you never would have wanted. What was your mom's profession?
Oh my, she did various things. She was a seamstress. She did took care of little ones and also took care of elder ones and later on. So she worked her whole life until she retired. So
wow. And you live close by?
Yes, I'm close by. That I always have been, just to be able to go to her quickly if she needs me. So then getting that diagnosis, like, for me, accelerated what I already instinctively, I had been engaging her in conversation of like, well, when you see changes, let me know. I'll help you. And if I can, I'll find help. And that was not going to happen. So when I got the confirmation, I realized, okay, I respect her. I keep her engaged, but I cannot depend on her because she's not self-aware to tell me what she needs. So I need to make an executive decision here and get more help, because it was just me. But then once I got a more demanding job, I couldn't be there as much for her and she needs more care. So then that's when I got another caregiver. So now I'm more at ease and I got cameras so that I could check on her. Because dealing with a diagnosis as such, you need to make sure they're safe and that you can respond swiftly if it's needed.
So that's a really interesting point you made, that of course you always talked with your mom as if she had capacity and she would tell you what she needs. You just said she was this capable woman, told you that she paid her bills, she did this, she did that. Mm-hmm. And then you realize that, but you depended on her telling you what she needed as she got older. And clearly she couldn't, she wasn't going to be able to. So that's just such a dynamic shift, right? In your relationship. Suddenly, she's not like the parent that you had always had, that had autonomy and independence and self-awareness. Mm-hmm. I think it must really like do something for you, a big shift in your role.
Oh, yeah, it's a big shift. That in the dynamic, also psychological. Just because you have a diagnosis doesn't automatically shift how you relate. It takes time. And as I grew to develop more understanding, what are the behaviors that go with the condition? What is a progression? And starting to see it for what it was, that allowed me to shift in how I relate to her. And not having what I used to have when I was oblivious was like, I would get so upset and resentful that she made life so hard and not telling me what she needed and losing things I gave her an hour ago. But that added more tension to me. I didn't like how I showed up and I didn't like how she responded. We both didn't like that dynamic. But once I learned what I was dealing with, then I shifted to, oh my, I can't expect her. She can't. She honestly is doing as best as she can. And so am I. Let me shift from expecting to just observing and responding. And I could see, I feel blessed to be able to be near her, be able to help her and notice if she needs something and take care of it instead of demanding when I did not know I wanted her to tell me because I had that mother that did things. So that was quite a shift. It stirred up stuff emotionally for both of us in not the greatest way, but it opened space to recognize, what can I say? A big challenge was with experiencing her frustration and my frustration. Mm-hmm. And I used to take those, I don't even call them anymore. I used to call them tantrums when she would just behave in such a way, so dramatic and emotional about things I didn't think warranted that. But then I realized, oh my, it's the decline, the changes in her brain that she cannot regulate like she used to. But I can. Okay, so how can I shift this for us in a way that's better, not taxing for both of us? So it helped me to shift and see it as, oh my gosh, this is her cry for help. This is how she is capable of showing her frustration. And I can't take it personally. We go off on our loved ones because that's who's close to us and they see us in our true colors. But it's not coming from a bad place. Mm. It's pure frustration and that's the only way she could voice it.
Do you have an example? Like, is there an example that sticks out in your mind?
Oh my, I'm even thinking of something simple as helping her. I'm thinking about safety, as you know, as a caregiver, and you don't want the person to trip or fall. So I was just clearing space and I gave her homework. She had one chair too much in her living room and I thought that was a hazard. And I gave her weeks of warming her up again, building up constant reminders. Okay, you have three chairs. One has to go. You choose which one. You only need two. and take your time. And every time I kept asking her, I finally told her, this Saturday I'm coming and I'm taking the one you chose for me to dispose of. And she, when I got there and I told her, so which one's the one you chose? She just collapsed in the sofa and started crying and telling me that all her problems were my fault. And she just went off and started crying. And then immediately I had been doing the shifting that I felt it, of course, it hurt me that she's blaming me for her problems. But then I realized, oh my gosh, she's frustrated. Okay, I need to give her space to like cry it out, and I need air. So then I became conscious enough to do that, and it helped. It just took a few minutes. And then next thing you know, I told her, so I'm going to take this chair. The emotional wave passed where she just like, okay, that's happening. Mm-hmm. It just took a few minutes. If right. I would have reacted like I did before, it would have not been pretty for both of us. Right. So just giving space and time to feel it, they'll forget that no one's attacking you here. Mm-hmm. It's about you having a nice, clean, safe space to be home and safe, but you can't rationalize it. That's what I'm coming to realize. So it's just let her feel it and then tell her a matter of fact, I'm taking this. It's good for you to have space. Okay. As opposed to, oh, it's a safety issue, blah, blah, blah. That's not going to get through to her.
Right, right. So and I've you learned- making the decision, just making it happen without having her make the decision, just doing it, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And yes, just doing it. But this is my own preference. As much as she's cognizant, whatever degree, I like to tell her what's happening. But I've learned that simple is better. Mm-hmm. Just keep it short, brief. Ultimately, the decision I'll make, I've done it for the best of her. Like I tell her, everything I do is for you to be safe, to be well, but I don't need to explain the rationale to her. That's precious energy I could use for something else.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So have you started paying her bills?
Yes. It's been a few years, actually. That's before. Mm. Yeah. I'm her POA. I do all her, manage everything for her. I started to notice she couldn't cook. She didn't eat. And I would get concerned. She wasn't taking her medications and she has other conditions. So that's an issue.
When you confronted her, what did she say? Like when you said, Mom, how come you're not eating or what's happening?
She would just deny it. But then I found that she was eating fast food. Mm. So that was a whole Pandora's box for me because, oh, that's bad for your health. But I came to understand it was because she couldn't cook. She would burn things. So the easy thing was walk and get some fast food. But that was not the healthiest. So she would have one fast food meal a day. It's not healthy. It's not enough. So all of that through the years on my own, I started to see that. And I shifted to order healthy cooked food for her. That way it's easier to just warm it up. Now a caregiver warms it up or I warm it up. So making sure she has her healthy meals. And reminded to take her medications by the caregiver and myself, or myself, depending who's there. Right now, the focus is for her to be able to do her day-to-day things to make sure she's safe. And I think I found a good, for now, as it's a constant evaluation of care.
And it sounds like it's taken a handful of years. Is this kind of a 5-year process, sort of looking back, realizing, oh, now I see what was going on.
Yeah.
Now I realize why she couldn't cook, why she was going to eat fast food, why the bills were piling up, really what was going on.
Yes, honestly. I did as best as I could without knowing what I was dealing with and just getting more involved, but then getting very emotional about it. So now with the diagnosis, it helped me to see, oh my, it's not a lack. Like I would tell the doctors, help me understand. Is it a lack of will or a lack of capacity? It's so overwhelming. And then they confirmed it's a lack of capacity. Oh my God. That was like a burden lifted on my shoulders. It's like, okay, so I need to get into executive decision-making mode. It's as simple as that.
Right.
So it just helps to shift with the reality once you have confirmation.
And was it a welcome shift for your mom? No.
That's what led for more to more tantrums. Mm. That's what she got more dramatic, which again, she wasn't like that before. This is a very sweet, even keel kind of woman. So it's the combination of noticing you're taking over my space in a way that she still has this wanting to look like she has it together. For the better time of the decline, I've seen her also very, in denial. it's only very recently, like in the recent weeks, that she's coming to realize, oh my, I am changing. There are real changes happening here. I'm not able to do what I used to be able to do. So that's very recent. That changes the dynamic in a good way, because now we're both being honest. It is frustrating. No one's trying to be hard on anybody.
Absolutely. It's hard. This is all hard. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And what a huge aha moment when you finally got the diagnosis. It's not that she won't, it's that she couldn't, she can't.
Yeah. That helped dissolve a bit of the charge of resentment and emotion that I used to have before, because I thought she was just giving me a hard time. And then I realized, no, it's not the case.
No. And before you got the caregiver, it was you doing all of these things.
Yes. As every mother, most mother-daughter relationships are complex. It definitely intensified it as she needed more care and yet latched into trying to look independent and put together. And me feeling that responsibility that, wait, I see you. I see that you're not able to do things. I'm not trying to step on your territory here. I want to make sure you're okay. So it was a bit of that shift. It was taxing. Before the diagnosis, I think I did as best as I could, oblivious to the reality. And it was very taxing to feel so responsible and feel so resentful about her not being a grown-up. But I didn't have perspective.
Right, right. And trying to keep her face, right? Like trying to be able to keep her feeling like she was independent, yet she wasn't.
Yes.
That's a hard road. That's a tough road to walk there.
Yes.
Yeah.
It is tough. But Barbara, I've come to a place now, because again, she's kept in denial, that it's actually a blessing that she is cognizant enough to craft stories to make it look like she has it together. I've come to now with the diagnosis, I come to see, oh, she's cognizant enough. Oh, and she cares. Oh, let me laugh it off. Like, well, not in front of her, but on my own, I'll be like, okay, she's crafty. She still has some cognitive, you know, abilities and care. So that has shifted it. Also understanding that with dementia, long-term memory stays, short-term gets spotty and is the first to go. So the fact that she remembers things happen and covers them up, to me, it's like, okay, that's a blessing. It's there. She still has that.
Yeah, she still has that ability. Like what? Is there a story that comes to mind?
Oh my, let me see.
Where you're just rolling your eyes like, mom, there's no way that happened.
A very brief, simple thing that happened recently. And again, it's like having perspective has helped. Is it's complicated with dementia. It's not just that. There's a bit of sadness and helplessness. So I text her small circle. I text them and ask them to call her. So I asked a friend of hers, a long-standing friend, to call her. She called her and my mother did not recognize her. But my mother engaged in the conversation, oblivious to who she was talking to. So after the call, I called my mother to ask her because I knew who had called her. And I asked her and she just said some woman called her, and she made it look like there was a woman. I don't know, but nowhere to the friend, the family friend. So at the moment I was like, wait, she's lying. And then I checked myself. No, she's not lying. She's not admitting she didn't know who called her. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I kind of put that on the shelf, and then I called the friend and I asked her, so how did it go? And she shared with me, oh, I called your mom, but I don't think she recognized me because she talks to me very differently when she knows it's me. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, I'm so sorry, but I think that's what happened. So then all of that, I'm fact gathering here. And later on, I confronted my mom and not expecting anything because again, she's declining. She might just totally like deny. And I told her, mom, remember you told me, remember a woman called you yesterday? It was that same day, the next day I told her. And you told me it was some woman that for the life of me, I don't know who. I know everybody you know. And I didn't know who you were talking about. Mm-hmm. And it turns out your friend called you. And she told me she was sad because she realized you didn't realize it was her. Because you guys talk in such a warm, caring way. And you were not talking to her like it was her. And she actually admitted, she said, I am so embarrassed. I did not know who it was. Mm. And that's huge, Barbara, to admit it.
Yes, huge.
It's like all that long spiral to get to. To admit that as opposed to deny, cover, or justify.
Mm-hmm.
So then we had a really heartfelt conversation about that. It's like, Mom, it's okay. If someone calls and you don't know who they are, ask them. You're gonna have a way better conversation knowing who you're talking to.
Right.
Just ask. You're right. I'm going to ask next time. So to me, that was so huge for her to admit, no, I did not know. And I didn't get on a high horse of she lied. No, she honestly, if I step back, given her diagnosis and where she is, she's not lying. She's just crafting something to explain something that happens without knowing what it is.
Right.
It's so confusing as a loved one seeing that and not take it personal.
Sure. And I'd say, Mom, how could you not? That was your best friend. How could you not know who you were talking to?
And if you don't know, just ask. It's okay.
Sure. Oh, you came at her so compassionately.
Yeah.
Very sweet.
It's the best way to just talk it through. No judgment. Because it's not coming from a bad place.
You also talked about in group, you told this wonderful story about another compassionate interaction that you guys had that I thought was just so lovely.
Was it the fun date? Remember
about cooking together?
Yes.
And a little bit about how your mom really wasn't a very affectionate, demonstrative person. She didn't always compliment you. Mm-hmm. It just wasn't her style throughout life.
Yeah, well, that brings it to a whole other thing. As when you're a caregiver of a loved one, you're so focused on, well, at least I'm very proactive in advocating, researching, making sure she gets the best care, that you get so into that task mode that you don't get to enjoy her or each other. So it went of several months of just, well, as you're going through diagnosis and assessments and, oh, and these multiple battery tests and sessions, it was many months of just appointments and follow-ups and authorizations that I didn't really get to have time with her. And it hit me, oh my, I need to cherish every moment and I need to make time. So I became more intentional about creating fun dates, as I call them, fun mother-daughter dates. And what you're describing is one of those where I thought, what mother does not enjoy, and I know my mother did, cooking for her daughter. So let me have her do this. Like, let's see what recipe, if she remembers a recipe, let's see her in her element cooking. She always loved cooking and sharing what she cooked with neighbors and everybody when I was growing up. So then I asked her if she could cook one of my favorite dishes, this delicious Mexican porridge. And I bought the ingredients and I kept telling her, so how about I bring you this Saturday so you could cook that yummy porridge? And as it got closer, she would remember. Again, it's so selective. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to give her something good to think and look forward to.
Mm-hmm.
So the day came and I brought her and I told her, okay, the kitchen is yours, of course, between you and I was supervising for safety. But I wanted her to feel like free to do and see what she would do. So she started slicing one of the key ingredients, a zucchini. She started slicing it in a way that I was concerned because she was holding it up and defying gravity. And I was like, no, that's a safety issue. So I just asked her, I told her, how about you put it on the cutting board? And so she started cutting on the cutting board. So that was it for the scare. She did it as I asked her. It was safe. So she put that in the pot. It's boiling in cinnamon and milk, all that good stuff. And then we're talking as it's cooking. And she surprised me with a compliment. Again, as you shared, my mother's of generations and generations prior, there was no expressing affection verbally or physically. It was just about covering your basic needs. And it's interesting that she complimented me and told me I was a great woman. And it touched me because I'd never gotten compliments from her growing up. And then she kind of just looked at me and goes, she's a little lady. And that's huge. Eye contact is another thing that just did not happen back then. So I'm taking it in. I can see the tenderness and that she's coming out with this emotion. And she also had an aha. And she shared, it's not okay that growing up, my mom was not, I got no affection. It was not okay. And then I told her, yeah, isn't it? It's not okay. And it's so nice that you are expressing what you feel now, even though you didn't have that. So isn't it nice? How does it feel? So I kind of just stayed in the moment. I could see the emotion. She couldn't say it, but I could feel she could, I could see the emotion. I just hugged her and held her tightly. And then we just had tears of joy. So it was such a bonding moment to, for her to see that, because I've had my own ahas. The resentment was because she wasn't affectionate. I understand why. Mm-hmm. Like I tell her, and it's a blessing that she gets it and it's connecting it, that you couldn't offer me what you didn't get.
Right.
And it's so beautiful that we're creating that now.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was her feeling, me creating that intentional fun time and safe space that allowed her to open up. And it was so nice to experience that with her and have, yes, we have the tantrums. Yes, we have all the non-fun stuff, the treatments and appointments. But it's nice to have flashes of heartfelt moments and to see her reach ahas like that. To
like realize, that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like you created this safe space and she was able to be vulnerable in a way that she never had been. And she never had gotten from her parents.
Yeah. Like many people. And for her to see that. And like I told her, it's nice. When she's feeling, I could feel the emotion in her eyes, and just it's just so much for her to feel, because as she says, you know, I've had it tucked away for so long. Mm-hmm. And I told her, well, let it come out. This
right.
is safe.
She said something in Spanish. You said, right? Say it in Spanish.
She said, lo he tenido bien guardadito. And she touched her heart. And I was like, oh my God. Oh my God. All these feelings that, like I told her, because you were not allowed, it was back in the day, it was just about survival. And I told her, we need food for our tummies and for our hearts. And for me to hear you tell me these beautiful feelings you have, it's so nice for both of us. And I want you to get it out. Well, she has something. And it's coming out. It's so nice. It's so nice to see that.
And you even taught her how to hug.
Yeah, that's another thing that, again, product of your generation. There was no affection. So I wanted that. And she couldn't give me that because she didn't have it. So I took it upon myself to coach her, quote unquote. And that was a process. It was a process because I would stand close to her. I could see her a little uneasy. And then I would hold her arms and put them around me. And they would just droop. It was a buildup to just get her to say, the beauty about a hug is that I could give it to you as you receive it. And it's just such a nice way to show that we care for each other. So it took a buildup. It took a buildup. I didn't take it personal because it's like a skill. If you didn't experience it, you're learning it. So it was a buildup to eventually, if I move forward, another beautiful moment we had this weekend, and I'm making a note of these things, is she actually, when I arrived to pick her up, she actually was so happy when she opened the gate and told me, let me hug you.
Oh my
gosh. And I was like, wait a minute. It was a lot for me to register in the moment. Like, of course. But then I was like, she's asking me to hug. She's offering a hug when she couldn't even wrap her arms around me a few years ago.
Wow.
That's huge. Again, this is the woman that in the medical records is declining cognitively, yet I think she's growing more, what can I say, more allowing herself to be more of herself, let her feelings come out. And it's such a blessing to see that. So sidebar, as a caregiver, proactive caregiver, I've been keeping a little notebook of incidents to report to the doctors to notice decline. But then in my shift, I started a journal of what I call like nice moments or mini victories with her. And that's a mini victory for my mother, who would never hug me, who I coached through the years to hug me, to offer me a hug verbally and physically is huge.
Huge.
Yeah. So I feel very blessed that I want to encourage all your listeners that, yes, I know we're all trying our best and trying to make sure our loved ones have the best care. And I also want to remind us to make the time to cherish our loved ones, to in showing up and just enjoying them, they also open up and they feel like loved and cared for, and not just, at least for me, I don't want my mother to feel like a diagnosis or just a cocktail of pills that need to be administered and a bunch of doctor's appointments. That makes you like such just a diagnosis versus she's a beautiful woman with a beautiful story that's trying to still come out even as she's declining.
Amazing. Isn't that amazing?
It is. So I feel blessed to be creating that space for each other.
Absolutely. So mm-hmm. healing for her and for you.
Yes, it is.
So how has it been with a caregiver now? Is that a big shift for you guys?
So, well, as I shared as earlier, you mentioned with the changes, there was a bit of tantrums at the beginning. But I read up that this happens sometimes when you, as a relative, have been the one doing everything. And now you're like stepping back. I'm not stepping back, honestly. I'm still engaged, but just having some respite, having somebody there. So it's not just me. So there was a bit of emotional tantrums and I did not take him personal. I psychologically prepared, but I always engaged her and asked her, mother, it's your space. I want you to feel safe and comfortable. Tell me if this person, if you don't feel comfortable with this person or if you do. And I check in, of course. I also pop in and check. So she's doing well. She's doing well. The person is very responsible, is also very, the key quality to me from when hiring a caregiver is that they're also coachable because ultimately your loved one's needs will be changing and you want to make sure you can communicate and they understand and implement. And that's a quality I look for. So I feel blessed I found somebody that is coachable. We communicate. And mother is, I feel so much at ease that it's not just me. There's someone there. She's not alone. Yes.
Yeah. Huge relief for you to find someone you trust that you can communicate with, that'll talk to you, tell you what's happening with your mom.
Yes. Yeah. And the other thing is that frees up psychological, emotional space to actually be a daughter and enjoy her. Hence the fun dates that I've been intentional about carving, like what I shared before.
Such a great point. Yeah. That's right. You were so involved in the tasks
that you don't right? get to enjoy.
Yeah. The doing, the going, the making appointments and right. And now you're right. It lets you be a daughter again. It's so important.
It's huge. And another thing I want to say, because I'm sure some of your listeners might be like I was, maybe, is that you love your loved one so much. You want to do it all. But then when you overextend yourself, you run on fumes, you burn out, and you start becoming irritable. I know that. And then you don't feel proud of yourself, how you're showing up. So it's actually a very healthy thing for our loved ones and for ourselves to free up space, to allow help. Of course, do the due diligence. I know I was an oddball when I interviewed many caregivers. They would tell me that I asked too many questions. And I would tell them, I would try to empathize, to get them to empathize and tell them, okay, I know you're young, because sometimes I'd be interviewing like somebody younger than my mom significantly. Not significantly. I wanted somebody mature. Well, they will be younger by a decade or two or so. And I will tell them, but you're young. But what about when you are 70 and you need care? Wouldn't you want your son to make sure that they interview and make sure this person has the qualities that matter to you? Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I'm doing for my mother.
Yeah, good point.
And that would help me weed them out. When I saw somebody, I was just like, just wanting the job, but not really caring, no mm-hmm. heart in there. No, thanks. I don't want to hire. Right. And based on that, helped me understand. If they could empathize, that helped me gauge. This is a person that has qualities that I would want in a caregiver that my mother has. My mother was also a caregiver and she was very caring, kind. Didn't see it as just a job. So I wanted somebody nice and caring like her. And
absolutely. Of course. Yes.
So what if I was an annoying daughter asking a million questions? That helped me weed people out.
Yes. And good for you. Good for you that you did that.
Yes.
And it's interesting that you're not talking about feeling, well, maybe you felt this way, like a failure. Gosh, I can't do all this. I have to like get back to my own life. As much as I want to take care of my mom and do everything for her, I really need to pay my own rent too. But that, it seems like you really had a balance in there. Like, I need to find someone who's going to be loving and take care of my mom the way I would and get back to my life.
Yes, but in the, it was, I wouldn't say, but it, I did have internal tension. That's why I nudging your viewers to not get there or listen to the warnings, because we start noticing in our mood and our energy, our insomnia, like we don't sleep well, we're worried, we show up irritable. So I started to notice that, and I didn't like that. And, mm-hmm. but I wanted to change that. And I knew that I can't do it all. That doesn't mean I'm a bad daughter. That means that I care about my mother so much that I want to make sure I show up as best as possible. So I need support.
So good for you for not going to the place of I'm a bad daughter. Why can't I do it all? Mm-hmm. You can't do it all. It's not humanly possible to be in two places at once.
No, I don't think I got there. I did get to the place of like, yeah, I wanted to do it all, but then I realized, no, this is not sustainable. It's not healthy. It's
good.
Not
good
healthy
for you.
So that's why I want to remind your listeners, because sometimes we feel like only relatives could take care of our loved ones in the best way possible. And actually, if we don't take care of ourselves, even as relatives, we can provide the best care. Even my mother says, no somos de palo, no somos máquinas. She'll say, we're not made out of wood or something like that. She's pretty much saying we're not inanimate objects. We have feelings, and we get tired.
Right.
So
we poop out. Yes. We need rest. Mm-hmm. We need sleep. Absolutely.
So that's important to find that balance. And we found a nice medium where I'm still super involved, of course, because that was the other thing. I'm still involved, but not physically doing everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I did my due diligence in finding a good qualified person, and I'm engaged even. And of course, there's a curve of showing the person what the care expectations are, of course. So I'm still involved in it. And it's nice to see that in relation to introducing a caregiver, my mother's tantrums have disappeared because she does have the care that she needs. She knows that I care and I'm still involved. So it's nice to see that this transition, and who knows what's ahead, because this is progressive, you know?
Absolutely. Who knows what's ahead? Well, I hope that you'll come back and you'll tell us how things are going as you move on in this journey. So as you experience what's ahead, that you come back and describe it to us, because you're so articulate and in touch with your feelings. And it's beautiful to see and beautiful to hear. So thank you for sharing how this has all been for you, because it sounds like it's been quite a shift in your relationship and in you and in your mom, really.
Yes, it has. No, I'm grateful for it. I mean, the group you lead, this space you've created here in the podcast, because it's needed. Oftentimes we're all doing our best, and sometimes it could be a very lonely journey as a caregiver. And you're trying your best, your darnest best, but you might have blind spots. So it's beautiful to have this dialogue in this space to hear other stories or different ideas or ways of going about things. The humanity of it, like how we want to be kind to ourselves and our loved ones and not impose so much and not be open to support, whatever that looks like based on your unique situation and the stage that they might be in.
Yeah, open to support, open to help. Mm-hmm. It will only benefit you and everyone else to be open to help. There's no heroes here. This is such a long road. So really being open to getting the help however you can, I'm all for it.
And the other thing I want to remind, because we might forget sometimes we're so focused on taking care, making sure that our loved ones' treatment and diet is fine and it's good, that we neglect ours. And then our health could be at stake. That's one thing I would try to remind myself, like, okay, I'm making sure she has good, healthy, vegan food. Wait, I haven't eaten. Okay, I need to make sure I eat so that I'm clear-headed and I don't get sick, because if I'm down, then I'm no good.
Right, exactly.
So I definitely want to remind caregivers that just like if we make sure our loved ones' needs are met, we need to make space for our basic needs to be met as well. You know, our body could actually respond well and not be vulnerable to disease or exacerbating any pre-existing condition, because then it will be down and that won't be a good place to be. That, and if we could prevent it.
Yeah, absolutely. And we talk about taking care of yourself in our groups, and that sounds so trite, but basic things, get ignored, right? We just had a caregiver talk about not going to the doctor for so long because you're going to the doctor with your mom. You're not thinking about your own doctor's appointments. Mm-hmm. So yeah, just little things like that. That's called taking care of yourself, right? Eating 3 meals a day. Yes. Absolutely. We're not talking about going to the spa. We're talking about basic things.
Basic things. And the other thing.
And going to the spa, of course, if that's what you'd like to do.
Of course, there's nothing wrong with that.
No, of course.
But then there's everyday things, everyday.
Yeah.
Right. What was I going to say? Oh, the other thing, as I shared earlier with my little journal I started, is also as caregivers, we could be so on the lookout of what's a threat, what's an issue, what's changing, which is us, and we don't look at the good. So I'm very intentional. My mother's a woman of faith and she has this in her. So I try to encourage that regularly in her and me is, yes, this is frustrating. Oh, I know. Or after some kind of tantrum, you know that I love you and I'm here for you. We're okay, right? And she'll just say, yeah, we are. So I make sure I always clear the air and I tell her, so what is one thing you're grateful for? Yeah, there's all these heavy things going on, but there's always something good if we look. And so I try to remind us to look, to carve time to look at things we're grateful for. The fact that we could cook a meal together, the fact that we could take a walk, or even little things. Because it's so easy when you are dealing with such a heavy predicament to be so focused on the heaviness, the challenges, and not look at the light that is there.
Great point. Absolutely. To bring gratefulness into the picture. Yeah. In such a simple way too. What are we grateful for today? I'm grateful for being here with you. I'm grateful we have this time together.
Right? Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Nothing elaborate. So simple.
And so powerful.
And so powerful. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Denise, thank you for being here today. You are a bright light, a shining star. It's lovely to have you here. Lovely to talk to you. So I hope you come back.
Well, of course, I'm all about sharing the good. And thank you so much for this beautiful space and your great spirit. And I just want to just encourage everybody to celebrate and be grateful for the precious moments shared with our loved ones.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today on another episode of Dementia Discussions. If you're a caregiver or know someone who's a caregiver that would like to be a guest on the show, please call me at 310-362-8232 or go to dementiadiscussions.net/contact and let me know. I would love to have you. Remember that you can follow Dementia Discussions on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and many more. If you listen on Apple Podcasts, it would mean a lot if you would leave me a review. For any other information about this podcast, please visit me at dementiadiscussions.net. And please share this podcast with someone you know if you think it may help. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you here again next time on Dementia Discussions.